Hello, everyone, and welcome to the commentary for Genesis Avalon Patriot, episode 21. I am the director and co-writer and co-creator, Catherine Pride, and with me is my co-stoofer, Chris Bays.
Hi. I am also.
You are also?
Yeah.
You are present.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm physically here.
You are physically here.
That's true. Ice cream.
You do have ice cream. I already ate mine because I was not driving and you were. So anyway, so here we are back in the UK for one of the cooler episodes. I mean, like I say that like every episode cooler and cooler. But yeah, there's some wacky stuff that happens in this episode. So it was pretty neat because there's a lot of lore that's about to get dropped in this episode.
This is like the most lore-heavy episode
ever. Yeah, and it is stuff that we've known since the beginning. We knew it from the beginning. But we knew that there was a time and a place to kind of have the characters figure it out, and I love how we do it, because it all kind of... It all leads to the revelation that's going to come in later episodes about what's happening, but you need this in order to understand what's going to happen in the last episode of the show.
And there's stuff in this episode that we've known about since, like, 2011.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I'm sorry, I'm listening, so I'm trying to figure out where we are. That's right, because I spaced and forgot that there's a whole, like, half a scene.
So the script starts with the flashback scene in the script.
Yes.
And everybody recorded the entirety of the flashback scene. But the flashback scene is not the beginning of the episode.
Right. But my brain, because I had to mix it and write it, was like, no, that's scene one. In case you're curious, and if there's anything you missed in the actual scene with the flashback, please be sure to check out the transcript for this episode, because we actually put the whole thing in its entirety.
Yep.
So you can kind of read the actual flashback as it is.
Yeah. It's both as you hear it, and then at the end of the transcript, just the flashback.
Yep, exactly. This is pretty cool, because, like, I wanted them to figure out who... Because this is the episode where everything starts to connect.
Yep.
You know, we know that the U.S. side figured out a bunch of stuff, and they know that there's demons in the White House, but, like... And I say that colloquially. But, you know, the U.K. sides are dealing with a completely different set of circumstances, and this is the moment where they finally start to click it all together, which is pretty cool.
Things start to align and mesh, and you realize the problems on both sides are the same problem.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even when we started the show all the way back at the beginning, the way we wrote the outline was with the knowledge that the fight they're fighting is on two fronts. It's one battle, two different fronts, but none of the characters involved know that until this point.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty cool. Also, this also kind of gave us an opportunity to revisit some of Noir's backstory. Because originally in the outline for this show, we actually had a full, like, mini episode planned that was actually going to go into depth about Noir before he was cursed by Sekhmet. And we ultimately canned it because of a whole lot of reasons. We thought of a better thing to do instead, for one. Man, Jalen just nails this this spell. It's so cool. But here we actually get to confirm sort of the thing that I think was hinted at in the first show.
Yeah.
I think we might have mentioned that he was Pelennor before, but I don't think Noir's ever really talked about it.
No, it was mentioned in, like, the big scene where everybody gets named.
But this is the first time that really Noir sees, like, oh no, I was King Pelennor. I'm actually part of the Knights of the Round too, which is pretty neat. We originally had planned to kind of show you who Noir was before he was Noir, and then ultimately we decided not to do that. But I am glad that we got to do this bit where we talked about the fact that he's Pelennor, and that that has an actual impact. He was there is a reason why Cooper was looking at him going, man, I think you know what's going on here. You just don't realize it. It's because Noir, like all of the knights, have some hints of memory of their last life.
They kind of quasi-remember what they came from.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of why Gwen and Leo gravitated back to each other no matter what, because they are Guinevere and Lancelot.
I also really like how we revisited the idea that we first established in the last episode of the last episodes of Genesis Avalon proper.
Yeah.
And then reiterated with the symposium episode that you perceive the gods as being played by the Avalon or the person who channels that god's power.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Jaina is the Morrigan.
Yes, yeah.
Sam is, you know...
Yeah, he's Camulus in the scene. Yeah. And then
Natalie is the lady.
Yeah, and then there's some chick in this that makes a lot of the nostalgic fans cry. Uh-huh. Like I got a note from Chris Hackney being like, are you serious right now? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because...
So what was it like coming back to voice Asara for a hot second,
really,
10 years later?
Really hard, because I also had to make her British.
Uh-huh.
But like, not like super British. I had to like channel my best like... watching the Mists of Avalon movie with Juliana Margulies kind of like thing. But I really enjoyed it. It was really cool because, you know, when I wound up playing Asara the first time through, it was more out of necessity. I knew things that I knew I couldn't convey to an actor yet because I was still writing the story. So I kind of cast myself, because then that way you can't give away spoilers to people. But this time, I was approaching it with the informed knowledge of all of Laura Post's performances as Genesis Avalon. And I think you can tell, especially in this last spell, the way that I wrote the spell work for this was invocative of how Laura has played Jaina, and how the way I write spells for Laura and how she performs them very much has become kind of how I now write Avalon spells. And so, like, it was really cool getting to do a spin on the eye who see with the eye of the raven, the invocation spell, because that's definitely what that is. That invocation rite that I have her use for the Morrigan several times over in both Patriot and the original show. It was cool getting to do it here. And then there are things that Alicia and Jack pick up here.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't even realize they're picking up, but that will be important later.
Later.
And they wouldn't have known that unless they actually watched the spell and actually seen this. So. And yeah, it was neat having all the actors come back to play, because, you know, they're all playing their characters. But yeah, the idea that it's sort of the tale of Zeus. Of if I were to show you in all my splendor, you'd burn to cinders. Yeah. So I represent myself to you as an avatar of some kind. And in the case of Mac makes a conscious effort. He makes a conscious effort to actually make himself as visible. But that's also a trait of that god in mythology. Like Mononomaclear has been known to walk among mortals. So.
Yeah.
Also... I established here that Elaine, the Elaine Duloc that is mentioned as being Jaina's ancestor, is this Elaine, and this Elaine is Lancelot's wife, the sister of Guinevere, who was very, very snubbed and obviously very upset. And I thought, I was trying to think of like how, you know, because we had always said that she was the daughter of Elaine, and not just Elaine being the name of her biological mother, but she is descended of the line of the first Avalon. And I knew that when I wrote episode 45 way back in the day, but I was like, when the hell am I ever going to get to put that in a show?
Here,
apparently. The answer is here.
I don't know if any of the rest of you heard that, but it sounds like Merlin,
excuse me.
I mean, the other Merlin, said that the ace she tricked Arthur into sleeping with Morgan.
Yeah, boy.
Yep.
It was fun to get to look at the competing narratives that have developed of the Arthurian legend. Because obviously, you know, there's things like La Morte d'Arthur that really, like, built the romantic notion of Lancelot and Guinevere. And when we wrote the arc in the show originally, we wanted it to be a bit of everything. Like, we wanted it to be kind of like Mists of Avalon, kind of like the movie with Clive Owen and Keira Knightley, like, where it's, like, very, like, he's, like, Roman and, like, she's Celtic. Like, we wanted to do the idea of, well, how do we marry all these varying myths of Arthur into something that works with the timeline and the gods the way we've built them, you know, being that they're superheroes. And I loved that that bit about how the Ishii turned against Arthur was one of the few things we had not planned.
Yeah.
It came out while I was writing this, and I was like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's exactly how they would do it. That's exactly why this whole problem started, is because gods are really crappy and they like to test people for things that they can't possibly, you know, they love impossible tasks. Orpheus and Eurydice and like things like, I mean, God, even the Jewish God did it with Lot's wife. Yeah. It's a pretty common,
and Job.
It's a pretty common, not apocryphal. It's the word I'm thinking of. Like a Jungian archetype.
It's Jungian,
like it's a pretty comic world myth of gods testing you for something you can't possibly resist, just to remind you that you're not a god. Also, super fun that I got to actually show you getting cursed.
I know!
Because, like, we knew how that happened, but I love that they're all watching it, and the crew here is like, oh, I think we just watched Merlin get cursed. Oh my god. Like,
so much now makes sense.
Awkward. But this whole scene was like, I wasn't intending for it to be as long as it was. I just knew that there was a lot of lore to dump. And then I was like, you know, I'm just going to write the whole scene and then we'll intersperse
it. And we'll figure out what goes
And I
where.
Figured I would cut most of it. And then we started working on it. I was like, no, it's all good. Like, I'm just going to leave it in there. That's true. It doesn't. There's some fun music cues in here, too, that I got to use. A lot of, like, the stuff that I only use, like, in the scenes in the other world, but I got to use them here, too.
This is the epic magic music.
Yeah. I love that line. I love that, and I love the way that Alicia read that line. The such a pity I thought I had chosen well.
No, ma'am.
So good.
Sorry, if you hear me say no, ma'am, I'm not talking to Kat. I'm talking to the cat.
You could just, like, ignore her.
No, she was just putting her claws in my leg.
You could just ignore her.
Her whole claw.
It's funny. Playing Asara now is a lot easier now that I actually have, like, developed that vocal range. Instead of, like, age 20 forcing my voice down that far and then make it worse.
It's the one time that actually having a mature voice is good.
It's true, yeah.
Can I help you?
Oh, man, I just love hearing David play Camulus. It's just such a fun voice. Like, because it's closer to David's actual voice.
Yeah, he reads it more like his actual voice.
But, like, with some, like, gravitas to it. I like it.
I am noodles.
Oh, my God.
I have to hold this cat.
This is a commentary. Don't talk about the cat in the commentary.
It's a very cute cat.
It's a very cute cat. She looks like Noir.
Oh, it's the most important part in the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. The whole point of it. Also, I am not afraid to admit part of the reason why I wrote this exactly the way I did it was to shut David Ault up after years and years and years of making the joke of there's Genesis Avalon, there's Exodus Avalon, where's Deuteronomy Avalon?
Yes.
He used to do that all the time in ad-libs. I was like, no, stop it. There is a reason why there's a Genesis and an Exodus. That's the point of it. And also, The establishing of names here is also very important, for other things.
For things that haven't happened yet.
Happened yet. Da-da-da. Very mysterious.
Very mysterious. Four.
I'm looking at our waveform right now for this commentary, and I'm like, I hope everybody can hear me. Obviously, folks, you're not going to notice because I'm going to turn it up before you get to it. But it looks really quiet right now. It's just, you know, it's real nice.
Just talk louder.
I can't talk louder. I'm sick. We're both sick. Simultaneously, I blame the roller coaster we were on. She blames the comedy show we went to.
I blame the comedy show.
But we are a comedy show. But I'm tis.
But I'm tis.
Thank you. We'll be here all night.
I mean, I will be here. I'm home. I live inside this commentary.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said the thing. Yep. You and the first priestess of Avalon started all of this. Yep. You created. I also still find it incredibly sweet that when Noir sees a priestess of Avalon, he sees his soul.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, we showed in the flashback episodes in, like, it was like 37, 38, 39.
Yeah.
We showed Asara's rise and fall. And, I'm very pithy about it, being the creator of the show. And I, like, killed myself off in the first season totally fine. And brought myself back as a bad guy. And it's fine. Because that was the arc for the character. I already knew I wanted to do that. But the further I get from that part of the show and we're looking back on it, there's a lot of the way that Chris added layers to his portrayals of Noir that have made the bond between him and Asara really sweet and really touching, really sad. And I loved that moment of him seeing Elaine and realizing that's Asara. Like, he knows her better than anyone.
Yeah.
He will never forget her face. He will see tons of Avalons come and go, and he will always remember Asara.
Yep.
It's just very sweet. Just as she did by giving Morgan Le Fay the magic to enchant him. Guess she wanted to do it herself this time. And while she's doing that, Aron is speaking to Tunanu. There we go. They're putting it together.
That's not a coincidence. Well, it's good they're putting it together because we're running out of
episodes. I know, right? I don't have time for any more of this.
Good God. When we find out,
I have an idea. Yeah, you do have an idea. Tell us
what to do. She's so smart.
She's so smart. I love Alicia so much.
She's got so many guts.
Yep. Also, this is the episode.
Oh, yeah.
This is the episode. This is like the episode where they have their will, they won't they.
Emotional damage.
I love this scene so much. I had a blast writing it. I knew exactly what I wanted out of it. And as per usual, Sarah and Adam both, I already gave them a lot to work with, and they were like, yeah, but we're gonna blow it out of the water. It's fine. You know, that's what they do. They both have great chemistry with each other, and it always feels like their ad-libs complement what the other person's doing.
They really do.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Like, there is a... I just remembered what it is. Did she just summon me?
Oh my God.
He's so
the
mad.
The ad-libs on this. Oh my God.
He's
there
so mad.
I got to hear the raw for this take.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
he just kept going. There were like five ad-libs. That was like the one that I picked that worked the best because some of them got ridiculous, but they're so good. And you are making things way too complicated. Damn straight he is. I'm asking for you to help me do my homework. I am trying to solve a problem that needs divine intervention. Yeah, I love this scene because how much should I talk about this, do you think?
Probably a lot.
A lot?
Yeah.
So if you haven't figured it out yet, There's a reason for this tension. It is not friendship tension.
It's the romance.
It's the romance. I mean, I think that Sarah pointed up the best when she read an episode and actually like came back to it, was like, oh my gosh, is that what we're doing? I mean, they're a December May. They are very
December May. Yeah,
to the point where, and to make sure you know that this is not something that we just came up with, like, because the actors had good chemistry, which they do, but that was, they didn't even know that's where we were going, but yeah. I knew that when I cast them, and I wanted to make sure that they had that chemistry. But originally, when we wrote the very first, like, not even the outline, the pseudo outline,
yeah,
when we were first bandying ideas for how we would continue the show, and this was like right after we finished episode 50,
yeah,
there was a lot of talk about she's like the we were gonna make her like the bride of Manon O'Clear, and we were like, nah, that doesn't work. Like, that's a really reductive take, and we wanted something different, and so. We both talked about how the best lesson that comes out of this is, for Alicia at least, is like, she is not afraid to stand up for herself, and she needs an equal. And we both thought, man, what would be cool? There is nothing cooler than a god becoming your equal.
Yes.
Because they respect you for your humanity. And that was how we wanted to develop their relationship. And this is that moment where she's like, I deserve your respect. I love that line.
Yep.
I love that line. Because that is the crux of who Alicia is that she is so caring and so loving, but she deserves people's respect, and she's not going to just accept anything less than.
Yeah.
And he's so not used to that because, one, like he said, he spent a lot of time not talking to mortals, but also... Even if you go back and you read a lot of the myths about Mac, his relationships and his marriages are oftentimes the subject of something else happening. The biggest one I'm thinking of is Fond, his wife, who fell in love with a mortal. And when it became very clear that they could not be together, and she was pining and she was miserable and he was miserable, Mananon waved his cloak in front of both of them so they would completely forget each other. And his reasoning for doing that was because it would be less painful than both of them remembering. Yeah. And so you know that means he does care. He is a caring man. He's not considered a callous fellow in any of the mythology. And I thought that's like the angle that I want to really dig into with Mac. This version of Mac is, this is a man who does profoundly care about humanity, but he's had to stay so far in the shadows for so long that he kind of needs someone like Alicia to be like, you don't get to come in here and lord everything over people and be like, I'm going to come in here and exposition dump and then leave. Like, that's not what we're up to.
And he's a friend of humanity god.
Yeah, for sure.
And like we were talking before, there's kind of a Jungian thing with the friend of humanity gods that you can kind of characterize them as willing to settle with a human for some time.
Yeah, like him and Prometheus would be definitely like friends of humanity kind of gods. So that scene really gets to me, because you don't know if Mac and Alicia, like, we don't know what's gonna happen with them. I mean, I know. I wrote the end of the show and I've mixed it, but like, you the audience, I'm really curious to see like how people feel about the next few episodes, because it's all coming to a head, but like, this episode is the turning point in their relationship for sure. Whatever happens next will be with kind of the two of them both kind of knowing there's some real weight to the things they're not saying to each other.
Right.
And that whole kind of like, oh, it's serious now. Shit. Okay.
This.
So obviously you've all listened to the episode and now you're listening to the commentary. You didn't do it in reverse order, I assume. But man, oh man, we had so much fun giving this to
this was a lot. This was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah.
I want to say this went through like three passes before we landed on a scene that was
God.
What we wanted. Oh, yeah. It was really long.
Well, and it was so hard because we were trying to figure out how to resolve Maeve in a way that wasn't going to come off like a cop-out.
Yeah. And, like, the first take of this was really long, and then we had a take that was, like, very unclear action.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the other. That was the other challenge of writing this scene. Is it's a very visual scene, but we write for radio.
Yes, indeed. But we knew that the whole thing about the drunken queen, the lustful woman, is that historically, in the myths that she is referenced in, she is a queen turned goddess.
Yeah.
And she's not really a fighter. She's a manipulator. And so that's what we wanted to do, is we were like, there's no point in having a fight. There's no, like, let's blast each other with powers. Yeah. You gotta outsmart her. What? Take those eight. And this is such a great...
Take it out of your ears. Oh, finally. What's it like being in the water?
Tell me you didn't... Also... Congrats to Brady for having to play Gabe and then also Roxy pretending to be Gabe. Amazing.
I love that you are a knob.
Yes. Quick, get the box. I'll grab her. They're so great. Also, I'm so glad I got to do Chipmunk voice on her once. I almost was like, shit, I wish I'd written a line so you could hear her like
hi, baby.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted it. But no, also, Ailish has been phenomenal the whole show. And I appreciate her being such a good sport. All the way to her locked into a cage, into a little tiny box. The Greek myth. Poseidon and I have a long storied history. Yeah, and that's this is a pretty fun, so I like the, there's, I was gonna say we wrote the line pretty close to what he did, but then Adam just kept adding to it, and I was like, "Yes, keep doing that." But no, we both have in a lot of our other work that's not radio drama, other fiction work that I've worked on, like the other manuscripts we've got and stuff like that. We very much love, you and I both love the idea that the gods interact with each other, and we even had a Mac earlier in the show mention that, like, there's treaties and there's alliances
and there's USAW
symposium. They all talk to each other. But I just love the idea that the two gods of the sea gamble all the time, and that Poseidon's a bit of a baby when he loses, which makes sense. I love it. Made from horseshoes from Apona's steeds. It'll keep her quite secure. I had so much fun looking up all of the stuff to do this spell. This was a lot of fun. I got to pull out all my books for it. And tear them down. They're doing it because they don't think much of themselves. So if her intent, that was all you.
That's right. Bullying.
Yeah.
She's a bully.
Yeah. That was your. That was
you
your.
Gotta make the bully look as small.
That
as
was ultimately what. Yeah. You were the one who cracked the scene. No, this was how. And that's how you cracked the scene.
That's how I cracked the scene. Because again, like I said, there were several iterations of this that were really long and really cumbersome of how to fight.
And we were like, this is not working.
And trick her. And we knew that the key of it was that it was going to be, it's actually a woman. And so her magic is, I am no man, the Witch King of Angmar.
Yeah, pretty much. We wanted to borrow that. Yeah.
But obviously we don't want this to actually be the Witch King of Angmar type moment of pulling off the helmet.
Yeah.
And like, I am no man. I just realized, you know, okay, well, this is a fae, and we traditionally think a fae is very small.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what's another person you think of as being small? A bully.
Yeah. She put it together. It's amazing. I love it. Be careful. Mm-hmm. All of you. Yeah, okay, Mac. I like that be careful is for one person.
One person.
Then he's like, oh, yeah, and also the rest of you.
Be careful. All of you.
Exactly.
All of you. Be careful.
Be careful.
Thanks again for doing this. Brilliant job.
And I love this scene because, you know, we've been moving Roxy in this direction since the show started of just, you know, she's alive now. She's got the past behind her. But she is the acolyte to another complete different pantheon of gods.
She also is one of the knights.
Yeah.
And how does that fit?
Yeah.
Well, we've always known.
Yep.
Ha! How tired are you guys? Just in general, how tired
like
is the audience
one
that
to
listens
10.
To this of us saying, well, we've always known. You guys are just finding out, but we've known
at this
point, since like 2010.
At this point, I feel like they've got a counter. Like you know,
like,
how there's like
please don't take a shot every time we say
no.
Well, we've always known because
you'd be drunk.
Your liver is important to me.
blood's here.
Okay, and cirrhosis is a bad disease.
It's not fun.
Come on.
No.
Oh, yeah, pint.
So.
And you owe me one, too.
Wait, what? The last happy moment.
Yeah, stuff's about to get real serious.
Stuff's about to get serious, yo.
Yep. And in my defense. That didn't make you sound like any more of a knob than you actually are. Yeah, Sean had a blast with the ad libs for this, but.
And we've made it through yet another episode. Right.
Yep, so that is the end of episode 21. Join us next month for episode 22, where we will be starting essentially what is a 3-part finale. So it doesn't say that anywhere on the show,
but it is.
You can kind of tell if the quote that makes up the title of the next 3 episodes is one big quote that is one of my favorite quotes about a particular God. I'll talk about it as we go. But let us know what you think. Check out the Pendant Blue Sky if you haven't already. If you're on the Discord, please let me know over on the Patriot Discord how you feel. I am also on Instagram, and I'm still technically on the Book of Faces,
Book
even
of
though
faces.
Pendant is going dead over there. But let us know. Like I said, you can find me on Instagram. I have cat_avalon_pride. You can also find me on Threads under the same. I just never check Threads, so. Bye!
Bye.